Last week, the House of Representatives passed a farm bill that addresses agricultural programs, but not nutrition and food stamp programs. They split the farm bill in half, saying they would deal with the food stamp half later. Is this okay with you? Well, it's not okay with our guest, U.S. Representative Ron Kind from La Crosse. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, July the 18th. Congressman Kind says that America needs a comprehensive farm bill and that this particular bill passed last week in the House puts farmers and taxpayers in a bind. We welcome your questions for Congressman Kind about the farm bill and about other issues facing Congress at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Ron Kind is a Democratic U.S. representative from La Crosse. He represents Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District, which covers most of western Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Glad to be with you.
So, why did Republicans in the House split this farm bill in half?
Well, there's great disdain, unfortunately, on their side for the nutrition programs. You know, these vital nutrition programs that serve a lot of low-income children, a lot of seniors throughout the country, and for many years they've always wanted to separate that from the traditional farm programs, but. Listen, you know, agriculture is still the number one industry in Wisconsin. It employs more people directly or indirectly. Our farmers need a 5-year farm bill. They need to know what to expect over the next 5 years and what to prepare for. And they should not be held hostage to the political dysfunction that's coming out of Congress these days. And unfortunately, that's what they're getting. A lot of that dysfunction and a lot of bad policy is coming from this, too.
Well, does pulling the food stamp program out of the farm bill affect the farmers?
Well, it does, because the food programs, the nutrition programs, also benefit production agriculture and farmers throughout Wisconsin and the rest of the nation. But listen, I've also been, you know, one of the leading voices for many years, as you recall, trying to reform these outdated taxpayer subsidy programs that go to large agribusiness. And what they passed last week was doubling down on that. More corporate welfare to big agribusinesses, primarily in the southern states, while at the same time stripping out the nutrition programs that, again, help low-income children and seniors throughout the country. So the priorities are all out of whack with this farm bill, and many of the farm bill advocates and many of the farm groups out there were disdainful of this process and actually voiced their disapproval of the way the farm bill came up last week. So how we reconcile that piece that passed last week with what the Senate has already done, which is a comprehensive farm bill that includes all the programs, is really hard to see right now. So there's still a lot of work that needs to be done.
You were also calling for an amendment addressing new crop insurance. What would this have done? Why do we need it? And why was it rejected?
Well, you know, I was hopeful that, you know, with the large budget deficits, there'd be more support for ending a lot of these big subsidy programs. And in one area, they were doing that. They were getting rid of direct payments. So these are payments that go out automatically every year, regardless of production, regardless of yield, all based on past history. There wasn't much support for that, and there was bipartisan support for eliminating it. That would save $5 billion a year, but most of that money then got shifted over to other subsidy programs, including the crop insurance program. So Representative Petri and I, in an attempt to tighten up the crop insurance to make it more supportive for family farmers and more fiscally responsible for taxpayers, offered an amendment that would end the subsidies and place a maximum amount that a farm entity can receive to just $50,000 a year. But we also asked the private crop insurance companies to also tighten their belts a little bit, because under this bill that's moving through, those private insurance companies are guaranteed a 14% profit. They bear very little risk, and we pay their entire administrative and operating costs, which last year cost us roughly $1.4 billion alone. Now, there's not a business in America that wouldn't raise their hand and say, hey, where do I sign up for that type of deal? And we shouldn't be offering that in a farm bill in light of the large budget deficits that we're facing. But unfortunately, That amendment pulled up just a few votes short. We weren't able to get it included, and it certainly wasn't addressed in the bill that passed last week either.
You just wrote a column called America Needs a Comprehensive Farm Bill. We put that on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. What does your version of a comprehensive farm bill look like?
Well, one that does support family farmers as opposed to large agribusiness and the powerful lobbies that they hire here in Washington. Because these huge taxpayer subsidies going to a few but very large agribusinesses, that they're really not helping our family farmers back home. In fact, they're leading to greater consolidation in production agriculture, therefore leading to less sustainable agricultural practices. They're driving up land values, making it more difficult for new beginning farmers to enter the occupation, and we need them now more than ever. The average age of a farmer in Wisconsin, for instance, is roughly 59 years old. So we need that next generation who can step in and take over the operations or invest in a farming career. And a farm bill should be more fiscally responsible than these huge subsidies that get included year after year. That they've also decided to gut funding for the conservation title of the farm bill by over $6 billion. And these are vital land and water conservation programs that our farmers are asking for assistance to do, so they can be good stewards of the land, so they can reduce sediment and nutrient runoff that would otherwise go into our rivers, lakes, and streams that would adversely affect wildlife habitat and wildlife populations. And the last time I checked, outdoor recreation is a huge industry that employs a lot of people in states like Wisconsin. And these conservation programs, there's great demand for it. And in fact, today in Wisconsin, 3 out of every 4 farmers applying for conservation funding assistance are turned away because of the inadequacy of funds. This bill goes backwards drastically in that area, too. And I also would have liked to see more support for funding of vital agricultural research. We have some of the best research institutions in the entire world in Wisconsin doing cutting-edge new discoveries and new research that would help production agriculture, including organic in Wisconsin. And yet that's another area that suffered under the bill that passed last week.
You know, the current farm bill extension expires in a few weeks. What happens if there's no comprehensive farm bill?
Well, my guess is to be a short-term extension of the current programs in an attempt to give House leadership a chance to try to address the shortcomings of what they've produced so far. But we need to get something passed so we can at least reconcile the differences with what the Senate has already done. The Senate's passed 2 farm bills in the last 2 sessions of Congress, and by and large have been sitting around waiting for the House to get its act together so that they can reconcile a bill that President Obama can ultimately sign into law. So we're still far short of that happening. But in the meantime, our farmers, I know, are expressing a lot of frustration, and rightly so. I think they have not been well served with the performance of Congress. There's been too much ideology and not enough substance in this farm bill. And it's an important part to the economic growth agenda that we need for our country today. And it's just not getting done, which is unfortunate.
We have some listeners on Facebook with questions. Brad on Facebook asks, why hasn't a payment cap been implemented to encourage small business farms and level the playing field? It seems very simple to do and benefits small local farmers.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly what Representative Petri and I were advocating in the crop insurance reform bill. We were putting a limitation on the amount of taxpayer subsidized premiums for crop insurance at $50,000 a year. Right now, there is no limit whatsoever. So there are many large agribusinesses, especially in the southern states, that are receiving over $1 million worth of taxpayer subsidies every year. And these are some of the most profitable, some of the most wealthy business entities that we have in our country today, when virtually everyone else is being asked to take a haircut through sequestration and through other budget cuts. And that's not right. But we were also advocating and saying, listen, if you're a farm entity and you're making $250,000 worth of profit in a given year, you really shouldn't be accepting taxpayer subsidies anymore. You know, that's $250,000 of adjusted gross income. That's backing out all their expenses, all the deductions that they're entitled to take. That has received some bipartisan support in the past, but again, that wasn't something that was adopted through our amendment or in the bill that was passed last week. I think it makes common sense. I think it's fair, and I'm not asking any one of my colleagues to do what I'm not asking some of my large producers to do in Wisconsin. That's take a haircut in light of the budget deficits that we're facing so that the farm bills don't distort the market so much.
Yeah. Farmers in Wisconsin, I think, are having a pretty hard year with all the rain this year. What do they look forward to if this current bill passes?
Yeah, you know, it's true. Farming is a tough occupation, and my hats are off to our farmers. I mean, it's, for many of them, 24/7 operations, especially if you're milking cows, and you're subject to the whims of Mother Nature. Last year, we had drought conditions in the southern part of the state. This year, we had a terrible wet spring, so it was late getting the plant in. You know, for some farmers, mm-hmm. especially in my area, and I've got a small family farm myself in western Wisconsin. It was just a few weeks ago before we were able to get the corn plant in this year. And that's why there has to be some counter-cyclical or safety net programs for farmers. Or the alternative will be disaster relief farm bills that would come up, which are inordinately expensive, usually get loaded up with extraneous things. So again, what Representative Petri and I were advocating was not eliminating the crop insurance program entirely. We think it's a proper risk management tool that farmers should have available. Just tightening it up so that it is more responsible to the taxpayer and more supportive to family farmers, as opposed to the huge agribusiness that tend to soak up most of the taxpayer subsidies that get included.
Do you have a question for Congressman Ron Kind about the farm bill or about any other issue facing Congress? Give us a call. We have Congressman Kind with us for about 10 minutes. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, or you can tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Ron Kind is a Democratic U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District, which covers much of western Wisconsin. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, we are trying to reestablish contact with Ron Kind, Democratic U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. We had him on the line, and the line dropped. And we have him back. Good. I'm glad to know that. Congressman Kind, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
No,
there's
that's
a malfunction over here.
Yeah, I guess we have some telephone issues, but that's okay. We're glad to have you back. I wanted to ask you before we go to callers. We are going to be talking with a writer, a food writer, and he writes about food, agriculture, and energy issues. And he wrote a column that talks about the Senate version of the farm bill, including $1 billion in support of the ethanol fuel industry. But he says that corn-based ethanol in particular is really just a bad idea, and we shouldn't be investing in corn-based ethanol. What do you think of that?
Yeah, you know, I think biofuels have a role to play in the future, but there's always been this golden grail out there of cellulosic ethanol, switchgrass, biomass material, and we've always been 2 years away from developing the enzyme for that major breakthrough that we need. That would solve a lot of problems as far as food stock and the concern that our cattle industry in particular keeps raising in that. A lot of research is happening right now in Madison and some other campuses around Wisconsin. We need to keep moving forward on that research, and it's exactly why I was again disappointed with the lack of support for agricultural research and what was passed last week. And in response to that, Representative Nunez and I, a friend of mine from California, introduced legislation called the Charitable Agricultural Research Act, which would allow private funding for agricultural research leveraged with some public dollars that people can take a tax deduction in doing. It's worked very well in the past for medical research. We think we should be doing the same thing for agricultural research, especially if support is waning for agricultural research funding in these farm bills. And that may lead to a quicker advance in discoveries of, you know, the cellulosic enzyme that would solve this whole ethanol debate that's been raging in this country for a long time.
Is that Senate bill, the $1 billion, is that going to go toward research?
Well, I think it was supportive of the ethanol production program that already exists right now. And listen, there are some interests, obviously, Iowa in particular, that has a huge ethanol industry that's been built up throughout the years. But I think it's crucial, you know, especially for the innovation agenda that our nation needs, that we don't start skimping on crucial basic and applied research funding at whatever level, whether it's agriculture, whether it's medical, whether it's in the technology fields. It's the only way we're going to remain competitive and innovative in the global economy. And right now, those are the programs that are typically being asked to take the biggest funding cuts right now. And it's literally, you know, to use an agricultural term, eating the seed corn. You know, the seed corn we need to be planting today to reap a bountiful harvest sometime in the future. And a lot of that research funding across the various disciplines and fields are the ones receiving some of the deepest cuts with sequestration and the other budget decisions that are being made.
Let's go to the phones. Melanie in Hayward is with us. Hello, Melanie.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. My question, I guess, is what are your thoughts on what can be done to help make transitions from one generation to another smoother, like in regards to inheritance tax, things like that?
Yeah, Melanie, it's a great question. And I also serve on the Ways and Means Committee that has jurisdiction over the tax code. And it never made sense for me that if a business entity, whether it's a farm, whether it's a small business or whatever, if they wanted to pass that economic activity down to the next generation, why we're taxing it and forcing these families through all kinds of tax hurdles in which to do it. We want to, I think, support that economic activity and not make it more difficult. So I have been supportive for reforming the estate tax as it applies to generational transfer with business operations. That would apply to family farmers too, but I've also been advocating some innovative New Beginning Farmer programs to be included in the Farm Bill to make it easier for younger people to get that upstart capital that sometimes makes it difficult to make the initial investment in farming. You know how expensive it is and the fixed cost. Farming is a capital-intensive industry, and unless you're well-established, you're going to need some help through FSA or through some low-interest loans in order to get up and going.
Lori in Baraboo. Hi, Lori.
Hi, I'll be real quick. Thanks for the show. I am interested in being more educated on this. So as you were speaking earlier and mentioned possibly caps or your recommendation on caps for subsidies of farms making $250,000 in profits, I'm curious, is that the marker you use to designate what's a small farm and what's a large farm?
No, I mean, that definition is all over the board, and you end up with some of the biggest fights in the world when you start trying to define what constitutes a small farm or big farm. This is only based on profitability for an entity in a given year. So, again, it's just a simple proposition that says if you're an entity making $250,000 worth of profit in a given year, you really shouldn't be still receiving taxpayer subsidies at that point. And that, I think, is a fair and equitable way of addressing a lot of the budget decisions we have to make around here, because many people, and I think the Farm Bill is the classic example, they're trying to gut the nutrition programs that many low-income children, low-income seniors rely upon. There's no qualms to cutting funding for those programs, but when it comes to these huge subsidies to large, entrenched, and very powerful agribusinesses, well, more never seems to be enough for them, and I have a problem with that.
Let me ask you about a couple of other issues while we have you for the next couple of minutes. House Republicans voted to delay the Affordable Care Act, the mandates in the Affordable Care Act, or better known as Obamacare. Why did the House vote on that again yesterday?
Yeah, there were two bills up. One, actually, the Republicans were saying, listen, we agree with what the president did in delaying the reporting requirements for larger businesses. And I applaud the Obama administration for listening to the businesses, the associations who are saying, listen, it's not that we can't do it. We just need some more time in order to do this right. And the Obama administration heard that and said, all right, well, we're going to delay that reporting requirement. 95% of those businesses are already providing health care coverage for their employees to begin with. So it wasn't going to affect the extension of insurance. But the other one was more nefarious, and that would take away the individual responsibility piece of going out and obtaining insurance through these exchanges, which are due to kick off on January 1. And the key to the health insurance market, as it's true to any insurance market, is getting everyone in so you can spread the risk, including the young and healthy people. And if you take away that responsibility for them to sign up in the exchange, you end up with people with pre-existing conditions, with chronic diseases, and premiums would just skyrocket. Republicans know that this would happen, and that's why they're trying to delay that tactic in order to help it fail. But the more interesting news, Joy, that came out yesterday was what the state of New York just reported. and that was based on the rates that will be offered in their insurance exchange, it will be at least 50% lower than what individuals are paying today. And that's exactly what the exchanges were meant to accomplish, through greater competition and greater transparency, through that competition, drive down those rates. And in fact, that's what New York just reported yesterday. California, Washington, Oregon, Vermont reported the same thing. So that's the one thing that's been lacking in the health insurance market, is more competition and more transparency. And that's what these exchanges are meant to bring.
We have less than a minute. What's on tap today?
Well, then we may be moving forward on the reauthorization of the No Child Left Behind bill, the K-12 education reauthorization bill. I'm sure there's going to be a heated discussion about where we need to go with education policy. Again, it's one of those crucial investments we've got to be making to ensure that our kids develop the skills they need in the 21st century. I hope we do it the right way.
We'll leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Joy.
Ron Kind, Democratic U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Cynthia Schuster, and to Christy Taylor for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.